the Umberdale Group has been running for so many years now. Most of you have been here before, maybe just two people. Perhaps those new people haven't had much experience in meditation. But the rest of the group will help support you to have some good meditation energy in here tonight. So what I'm going to do for us tonight is to give a long guided relaxation meditation. So Ajahn Brahm and his teaching in the last few years has really been emphasizing the importance of relaxing, and the relaxing starts in the body and then continues to the mind. One reason I think he teaches like this is because our lives these days are so full of busyness, of stress, a lot of stimulation. I live in the forest, so my life is pretty quiet. I've got beautiful colours to look at in the leaves of the trees. I have kangaroos to talk to, but it doesn't get very busy. When I go to Armidale Shopping Centre or into the city, I really notice just how intense that experience is. So I move from a very quiet place to a very intense experience. A lot of lights, a lot of colours, a lot of sounds, and also just the relentless energy of people's activity and their busyness. So the stress from that needing to be somewhere, or pushing past people to get into the shopping centre or out of the car park. So this is what I notice, and it builds up in the body. And I think that's why Ajahn teaches us to just to relax the body, and through that the mind naturally becomes calm and peaceful. So that's what we're going to do. I'm going to talk for maybe 12 minutes or so with the guided relaxation, and then you'll sit for another 15 or so minutes after that. So what we need to do first is just find a comfortable position. So sink your buttocks down into the chair, and just allow the feet to be maybe hip-width apart, knee-width apart on the floor. And here, consciously, just take the shoulders up to the ears and then relax them down the spine. So open up the chest and then gently dropping the chin. As we spend a few moments just becoming aware of the room that we're in now, the space we're in. And so maybe aware of the sounds around us, the hum of the air conditioning, the rustling of people's clothes. And becoming aware of your body, sitting here in this chair. Feel your back pressing into the seat behind you, buttocks sinking down into the seat. And now you bring your awareness down to the feet, feeling the connection here of the feet on the carpet. So we're just grounding here. As you feel the feet on the carpet, just knowing that you're here now, so letting go of the day, all the busyness, all the activity, all the stresses just melting out of the feet through the floor. And not thinking about the future, not worrying. Instead, just being here, now, in this present moment, aware and relaxed. So we'll relax each and every part of the body, beginning with the toes. So feeling the toes, and consciously relaxing down through each and every toe. And when the toes are relaxed, softening the soles of the feet, releasing the heels and coming to the tops of the feet, relaxing. And you move the relaxation up the body, releasing any tension in the ankle joints, softening the long bones of the shins, releasing the calf muscles, and letting go of any tension in the knees. You relax the upper thighs, tops of the legs, releasing the backs of the thighs, feeling them sinking down to the chair. And then coming to the buttocks, softening, releasing, and letting go deep inside the hip joint, lower half of the body, relaxed, comfortable, and at ease. We come now to the fingers and the lap, and you relax down through each and every finger. Softening the palms. Releasing the backs of the hands. Letting go of the wrist joints. Feel the forearms softening. Letting go of any tightness in the elbows, the upper arms relaxing all the way up to the top of the shoulders, soft. Now we come to the back of the body, feeling the lower back. You release the muscles in the lower back, softening the spine. And moving to the middle back, softening the spine. Releasing the muscles. And coming to the upper back. Relaxing and softening. Even the shoulder blades. Releasing downwards as you relax. Letting go of any tension in the neck. That now the entire length of the spine is comfortable. And now you come to the front of the body at the lower abdomen, and here just watching the gentle rising, falling of each breath coming in, each breath going out, every breath drawing you deeper and deeper into relaxation. You can relax deep inside the body, or the internal organs softening, the sides of the abdomen releasing. You move up the rib cage, or the bones of the rib cage relaxing, even the lungs, even the heart softening. Moving up to the collarbones, releasing. The throat is soft, consciously letting go of any tension in the jaw. Muscles around the mouth, soft, smooth, maybe even a little smile as you relax. You feel the softness in the corners of the eye, the eyeballs gently resting, forehead smooth. Relax the sides of the head, letting go of the back of the head, and coming to the crown, relax, so that now the entire length of the body, from the top of the head all the way down to the tips of the toes, is feeling comfortable, relaxed, and at ease. And the mind is calm, still, peaceful. And so just keep on relaxing, keep on letting go. Any sounds, any thoughts that come, you see them coming, you just let them go. It's like leaves falling off a tree. Just allow them to gently drop away. Keep on relaxing, feeling the peace, the quiet. maybe some distracting thoughts, the past, the future, still coming to the mind, just let them go. See if you can become aware of the present moment, the pleasure, beautiful feeling of being present, the peace of the present moment. As we come towards the end of meditation, just reflecting, see how the mind is now, how the body is. Is it different to when you first sat down? What's changed and why? Finish just reflecting on how wonderful it is to sit here in this present moment, surrounded by supportive friends. How fortunate we are to have this little bit of peace, little bit of quietness, calm in our lives. When you're ready, gently break your awareness and arise from the meditation. How are you feeling now? Everyone's okay?
Mm-hmm.
Good to relax. I was a bit nervous coming here today. I had a chat with Marlene this morning on the phone. She called up. Call up every week to ask who's coming. And they said a Carlico, Venerable Carlico is going. She rang back a few moments later and she said, "Who is this? I've tried Googling him, but I can't find a thing." And she's like, I found something on Facebook, so she's quite good as a stalker. If you ever need to track someone down, she found a photo of me on Facebook and she said, who's this guy coming here? He only got ordained a few months ago. And I thought, oh dear, Armadale Group, they've been going a long time. They have the best teachers come. They have people who have had 40 years experience as a monk, like the great Ajahn Brahm, or the great Ajahn Brahmali of 20 years. And then they get this guy, he doesn't even have a Google profile. It could go either way, couldn't it, Armadale Group? There's no fail in Armadale, there's no fail in Armadale. But for me, it's a pretty risky thing coming here. For Ajahn Brahm, maybe he sent me here. There's no risk. You know, if I fail, I take all the blame. He'll say, oh, he's a new monk. Give him back to me and I'll see if I can do something with him. But if I go well, I'd get a bit of praise. All the praise goes up to Ajahn Brahm. He's my teacher. And he'll say, well, the fruit doesn't fall too far from the tree. So this is one thing that might happen. I might get a bit of praise. I might get a like on Facebook. Or I could go the other way. I'd get a lot of blame. Who do you think he was coming here to teach Armadale? The Armadale Group is a professional operation. They can't have this amateur turning up. So praise or blame, that could be one thing that happens. So if I do get a like, and I'm expecting Marlene, you to give me a like on Facebook, then maybe, who knows, I could get 2 likes. And before you know it, I'll go viral. I'll become a famous monk, a celebrity, like Ajahn Brahm. So this is another thing that could happen to me. Fame could happen. Or I might completely mess it up and I'll have ill repute. I'll have people, did you hear what he talked about? They'll say, that monk, never let him out again, he's trouble. So that's another thing that could happen, fame or ill repute, bad reputation, like a bad rep. If I do become a famous monk, I get all these gains in my life. So I'll get good things. Maybe I'll get like first class airfare somewhere, slippers, silk robes, all the good things. And I suppose if I fail, I'll get nothing. Maybe Marlene will defriend me. I'll lose. So that's another thing that could happen to me. Or if I go well, I'll get all the good vibes, all the good feels. I'll have some pleasure in my life, some happiness. I'll feel good. I'll go back to the monastery. I'll feel happy. And if I fail, I'll get all the bad vibes. I'll get all the heavy feelings, the sadness, the tears on my pillow. And so these things, these 4 pairs of opposite things, gains and loss, celebrity, fame or ill repute, praise, blame, and pleasure and pain, these 4 pairs of opposite things, these are known as the 8 lokadhammas, the 8 worldly conditions. And this is the subject of my talk today. These 8 lokadhammas, these worldly conditions, they happen to everyone all the time, every day, every part of our life. And the Buddha talked about these things and he said, we're obsessed by these things. Personally and as a society, we're obsessed by things, we're obsessed by gain, we're obsessed by praise and fame. And he said that our problem is that we don't see these things correctly, so we can't see their true nature. We're so obsessed with them, we chase after all the good things, the praise, the gains, the fame, and we run away from all the bad things, all the bad conditions, all the blame, the loss, the infamy. We run away from those things. So we're running to and running away from these 8 worldly conditions all the time. And it's this running and running to and running away that gives us suffering in our lives. So our attachment to these things, our obsession with these things that create suffering. And it's suffering that occurs because we don't see these things as they actually are. And the Buddha said, we have to see these things correctly. We have to see that these things are impermanent, anicca. They don't last forever. We have to see that these things can change at any moment. So we see them as, he used the word, ruparinama. This changing, you know, can turn on the spin of a coin, heads or tails. Any moment of our life it can change. And so this is what causes suffering, dukkha. He says these three things are how we should see these eight worldly conditions. But it's very difficult. It's very difficult to see these things. He said the whole world turns around because of them, and the whole world turns around due to them. And it just turns, one thing turns around the next. And so we can see this if we look at these worldly conditions a bit closer. So I'll start with gains and think about gains and how we're obsessed by gains in our life. So usually when I think about gains, I think about the stock market. They talk about stock market making gains. So we're talking about money. Who isn't interested in money here? No one? I'm not interested in money, but I've lost all my money, so I've got nothing to lose there. So money is one of those things. I think about my mother. She used to play the lotto every week. She really thought she was going to win, and she never won more than she spent, let's put it that way. So she was obsessed with this idea, running towards this idea of perhaps making some more money in her life. So this is the world, the senses, you know, these gains. We want to make some more money, we want a few more possessions perhaps, a better house, a better car. Maybe we want to gain a promotion at work. You think, oh, if only I had that promotion, all my suffering will be eradicated, get a new job title. But all of these things are impermanent. So money is obviously something that we can lose and spend very quickly. It's no longer there. My father, when he retired, he was so chuffed. He had what he thought was the perfect amount of money in his bank account, in his superannuation account. And he thought, this is it. I never have to work again. And then the GFC happened. He lost all of his money that he thought he'd saved and worked so hard for. And he had to start again. He had to go back to work. So that was quite distressing for him. Even objects like this, when you first bought this, I suppose you're very happy with this and you probably were very careful with it. And, you know, now it's getting a bit older, you care a bit less about it because you see that it's not permanent and you think, well, maybe if it breaks, I can get another one. Same with your phones. Sometimes you're happy when your phone breaks because you're like, yes, new phone. So we can start to see, though, in these material objects that there is this inherent impermanence in them, that they don't last forever. We can't control it, you know. These things, our phones can get stolen, we can lose our jobs. They change very quickly from one moment to the next. We can't hold on to them, we can't control them. But it's this belief that they're permanent, that we can somehow control them or manipulate external environments like work or our house or this country. It's because of our belief that these things are permanent and fixed that we suffer, because they always do change. They always do change. And so the Buddha said to see this as it really is, these gains and these losses, see them for what they are. Impermanent, changeable. The same thing for our ideas of popularity or celebrity. So it's really easy with the internet age to see just how unsatisfactory it would be to be a celebrity. Who'd want to be a celebrity? You think you're going to have a good time, you know, but there's a lot of suffering. But this fame, the word in Pali is yaso, which means having followers. So it's kind of perfect for the Twitter age, the Facebook age, having followers. We have these followers on Facebook, we're all celebrities in the internet age, the social media age. Who has a Facebook here? Yeah, a few people? Yeah? Who doesn't? Or more! That's surprising! Very good! I have a Facebook page, Charlene. So we want to have our life, we want to have some influence, even if it's not on Facebook. This is what celebrities have, isn't it? They have popularity, they have followers, they have influence. They have the ability to be seen, to have some sort of sway over people in society. And so this is about perception of others and perception of the self. To be a celebrity, to be taking selfies for your Facebook is starting to really cement this notion of self. And this is why the celebrities suffer, because their sense of self is very strong. You know, brought me this water today. Where's my Evian? I'm the kind of celebrity that only drinks Evian water. So they suffer because they attempt to control their reality by having followers doing what they want. But you can see this not only in celebrities like Donald Trump, but even in our daily lives. When we work in an office, maybe we want to be popular, we want to have some sort of status, we want to feel like people like us, that we wear a badge, we're important, you know. We have some sort of praiseworthy qualities about ourselves. And this is very dangerous for us, of course, because it can change just like that. And if we look at celebrities, we see that the change occurs very quickly and very swiftly. So someone like Rolf Harris, for example, very Australian, a very important Australian, now very infamous, has a bad reputation. And we only know about him because he was a celebrity. We were interested in him, in his life. And the same thing can happen in our lives. We do something, we make an action, and we can lose our status, lose our reputation very quickly. If we're not kind to people, they'll talk about us, and we'll have a bad reputation. So these twin things of reputation and celebrity, good reputation, bad reputation, just like having gains and losses, are actually part of a spectrum. We, with gains and material things, we care about them so much that that's what causes us suffering when we lose them. So we can't have one without the other. And the same with reputation. We can't have good reputation without bad reputation. Some people will like us, some people will hate us. Even Hitler had friends, you know. But this influence that we have over other people's lives, we have to be very careful with. So whether it's your family, your partnership, your relationship, or your work colleagues, or in a thing like this, coming to talk to people, it's very important that we have a mind of kindness and compassion for others, so that we're not too demanding of Evian waters or whatever. So there's another thing that the Buddha talked about. He also talks about praise and blame. So praise, I think, starts very early in our lives. I was staying with my sister recently. She had a little baby, two-year-old child is learning how to be toilet trained. And every time she goes to the toilet, there's so much praise. It's like bells and whistles. There's a round of applause. So she proudly comes and announces that she did a poo. Everyone's like, yay! And I think, wow, this is dangerous training, you know? You get rewarded every time you do that in life. So I tried it out myself. I kind of announced what I had done. Nothing. Nothing. And this is what happens. This society really encourages praise. We expect praise. We demand praise. If we're not getting praise in our lives, we feel unhappy, which is why Facebook is so successful, because we get likes, we get praise all the time. But it becomes a need, and we become obsessed by it. We think that if we don't get it, we're not doing well. And this praise intoxicates the mind, you know. We start to puff up when we get some praise. It's a dangerous thing, though, because most of our life, people won't praise us. I do feel very sorry for children growing up, because you do go through that time of receiving a lot of attention for doing very simple tasks, and then suddenly you reach, this is why teenagers are such hard work, because suddenly they're no longer being praised, they don't get all this positive affirmation in their life. Yeah, so you went to the toilet, yeah, so you did this, so you, yep, you ran in a race, so what? And so this is what starts to happen, we lose that praise. And if we're not careful with our actions, we can be blamed for things. So if we're not cautious of our behaviour, if we're not cautious of others and their needs, then we can be blamed. Of course, the Buddha, when he talked about praise and blame, said there is no one in this earth who is free from praise or blame. And so the blame can be from praiseworthy people. Even the Buddha received a lot of blame in his life. He had a bad reputation amongst the Brahmins. They thought he was naughty. They thought he was teaching the wrong path. People abandoned their families and went and joined the Sangha, the monks and the nuns. And he was blamed for this. So with these kinds of things, we can see how changeable they are, praise and blame, from different sides, different perceptions. So who is popular, who is successful, who is praiseworthy, depends on who is doing the looking. So for some people, Donald Trump, praiseworthy. For other people, Donald Trump, blameworthy. So we ourselves in our own lives are never exempt from these twin ideas. So should we just do whatever we want? Should we just hang it all? Doesn't matter? Well, the Buddha didn't say that. He said that we should be cautious about our actions. We don't want to just go around saying, I don't care what you think, I'm free from praise, I'm free from blame. Instead, he pointed out what was praiseworthy, and said that these praiseworthy things should be done. And he pointed out what was blameworthy, and said these blameworthy things should not be done. And he said the things we should do to do the things that are praised by the wise. So do these things that he talked about, maybe like make sure you practice things like generosity, kindness to other people, to practice not harming other living beings, to not take people's property, and do those kinds of things. So to avoid those blameworthy things that all of society would agree on, such as killing or stealing someone's property or stealing someone's wife or husband. So instead, practice the things that can be praiseworthy, and these are worthy of praise. Worthy of praise is good to have. So it's not like you say just throw out all of the praise, all of the blame, but just do these things that are worthy of praise. But still, there's drawbacks to praise and drawbacks to infamy. But they can often change from one moment to the next. Even infamous people can become famous, yeah? And become praiseworthy. Ned Kelly, the bushranger, the Australian bushranger, he was a bad man. He was a bushranger. He used to rob people. But he became a national icon, and held up as this kind of a kind of Robin Hood. Almost. So interesting how things change over time. And the last thing the Buddha talked about with these eight loka dhammas, these eight worldly conditions, is pleasure and pain. So pleasure probably doesn't need too much explaining, but it's definitely the realm of the senses, the realm of physical comforts, the things that we're attracted to in life. So we're attracted to good sensations in the body, pleasant sensations, maybe a good massage is something that we can be attracted to, or physical comforts like air conditioning on a hot day, good food, and the things that we are mentally made happy by, those happy and positive emotions, like joy, contentment. So there's this physical aspect of pleasure, and there's the mental aspect, the emotional aspect. And these are things that we run towards, and the things that we run away from are those unpleasurable aspects, the things that cause us pain and suffering. So these things can be discomfort. You've been sitting in these chairs for almost an hour now. Might have been comfortable at first. Maybe it started to change a bit. Maybe there's a little bit of discomfort creeping into the body, or other painful experiences in our life, other people, too tight shoes, too hot weather, these kind of things. Are beyond our control, you know. We have hot days, we feel discomfort, we want to run away from them, we want to some pleasure, turn on the air conditioning, gets too cold, turn the air conditioning off. It's always changing. The intoxication that we experience with these worldly conditions is such that we can't help but run towards them, can't help but run away from them. And this is why the Buddha said that the more running around we do towards comfort, away from pain, the more we intoxicate our mind with this idea that we can control our environment, our minds, then we experience more suffering. So there's going to be pain in our lives, discomfort in our lives. There's going to be praise in our lives. There's going to be blame. There's going to be a bit of status. Maybe there's going to be some times when you're not well thought of. There's going to be some gains in our life and some losses. So if these things are always there, how do we confront them? How do we deal with them? How do we stop this intoxication? How do we stop running around towards them and away from them? So the Buddha talked in one of his suttas, the Dutiya Lokadhamma Sutta, he asks a question, and he says, what is the difference between someone who has never heard the Dhamma, has never meditated, has never heard the suttas, has never heard the Buddha talk? What is the difference between someone like that, someone uninstructed, and someone like him, someone who's experienced the Dhamma, who's seen the Dhamma very clearly, who's had wonderful meditation that has let him penetrate the nature of reality? So someone like him, what is the difference between someone like him seeing these lokadhammas, these eight worldly conditions, and someone who doesn't have a clue about them? Do you think that the Buddha experiences these things? Yeah, he did experience them. He experienced pain in his back. He experienced blame. So he experienced them. It's not like you can hide from them. It's not like they won't happen to you if you have some sort of magic power. This is the nature of the world. You're going to run into these things. You can't run away from them. So what's the difference between someone who's got some enlightenment like the Buddha and someone who's running around in the world without that enlightenment? The difference, he said, was view, your viewpoint. How you view these things, which is pretty comforting actually, because it means that we don't have to have any special meditation powers. We don't have to be enlightened beings. We can start by loosening our attachment to these things by simply changing our view. Easy. And the way he said that we could do that was to just start to see these things just for exactly as they are: impermanent, inconstant, and full of suffering. And the more we hear this teaching, the more we ponder them, the more we think about them and think about their meaning, the more we're likely to develop some confidence in them. Thinking, when we see a bit of fame coming towards us, we don't react in the same way anymore. When we see loss happening, if someone steals our phone or phone breaks, we don't react in the same way, because we know this thing is impermanent, this thing is changeable, and my attachment to it creates suffering. So we stop being so intoxicated by these worldly conditions and start to create a bit of a buffer zone. We don't run towards them, we don't run away from them. When these things come towards us, we're a bit more like Teflon, you know, things just slide straight off. We don't need to suffer. And this is what the Buddha said, this change of view will actually help us by not being intoxicated, by not being full of anticipation for good times or hating on the bad times. We can actually start to release ourselves from suffering. And this is the path towards happiness. So a monk like me has started on that path. I don't have anything to lose. Come here to the Armadale group. Don't have anything to gain. Don't have any hope for celebrity. Maybe I wouldn't mind a bit of a bad reputation from time to time. Be like bad boy monk. No. I don't have many physical possessions to lose, you know. So this is I'm starting to feel the effect of the Buddha's teaching in these things, and a little bit of experience that I've had can give you confidence too, that there is some truth to what the Buddha was saying, that these things can cause us suffering, and that without them we can actually have experiences of happiness, of pleasure in our deepest spiritual sense. And so this is the path of meditation, is where we can start to practice that letting go, start to develop a detachment towards these worldly conditions. And so to finish tonight, we're just going to do a recapitulation, a kind of revisiting of this theme in meditation, because it's in the meditation that we start to get some peace and some equanimity towards these worldly objects. So we'll just start again. We can keep the lights on. Just feeling again the feet on the floor, the hands resting in the lap or on the knees. And just closing the mind, just allowing closing the eyes and allowing the mind to settle back down. So whenever we meditate, always for some time you start to see these worldly conditions arise. You start to think, oh, wouldn't it be nice, wouldn't it be pleasurable to have a little chocolate sundae or something? Wouldn't it be nice to have a banana pancake, Kit Kat? Or think about something someone said, this bad reputation someone's given us. These things appear in the mind. We know these worldly conditions. We've seen them. But sometimes in the mind, when we're meditating, we have that little glimpse of peace, that little glimpse of detachment from the world. Those glimpses of peace at first might be very short, but over time they become bigger, more expansive, and so the peace starts to push out the worldly conditions from our mind. And it's this detachment, this stepping away from those worldly conditions, that brings the mind deeper and deeper to peace, allowing us to have equanimity, even-mindedness towards the vicissitudes of life. And so for the next few minutes, just seeing what arises in the mind, see if you can identify it as one of those 8 worldly conditions, and seeing it for what it is, know it is impermanent, but it's something that will change beyond our control, and understand that it brings suffering into our life. And seeing this, let it go. And in letting go, experience some more peace, some more quietness. as the mind becomes less attached to the worldly things, it becomes more calm and peaceful, perhaps a delight will arise in the mind. And focus on this delight. It comes from deep within. It is always there whenever you need it. Unbuffeted by the winds of these worldly conditions. We can develop this peace, this delightful mind. So that anything that comes our way, we always keep this even-mindedness, this equanimity. We always have this stillness and this peace. So we've got a few minutes for some easy questions. It could be good to start off with any questions that have to do with the topic specifically that I spoke about tonight. If no one wants to ask any questions to do with that, that's really good. No questions? Even better? Yes. Yeah. Lucky you.
Oh, 14.
14's the worst age.
No.
They turn.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
But, so he's making choices that are very upsetting to me. And I'm thinking, I get attachment. I love him. But I've got to let that go. Do I?
Well, a mother's love for a child is one of the few things in the world, I think, that is a permanent kind of attachment that cannot be broken. In the Metta Sutta, just as a mother loves her only child, you know. So this is the kind of love that we actually try to develop through our practice. So we all, when we chant the Metta Sutta, or when we practice the Brahma Viharas, the four divine abodes, so Metta, Karuna, compassion, mudita, sympathetic joy in other people's happiness, or equanimity. These are the kinds of minds that we're actually trying to get. Mothers are very fortunate because as soon as the child comes out, or even beforehand, they have this beautiful love for their child. And that love is very special and very precious. And us other mere mortals, men, we have to develop this differently. We have to develop it. We don't have that same connection, maybe, as something that was grown inside our body and completely dependent upon us.
I'm a foster mum.
You're a foster mum, yeah. So
that is just a little tiny baby.
Ah.
So I've had to very quickly.
Yeah, develop that attachment. Well, practicing good meditation is also very useful. So this is the mind that we try to get, not only to particular beings, particular people in our life, but to all beings. So it's good to practice with people we know and love and have some sort of involvement with first. but they're going to be the ones that actually cause us the most suffering. And that's because of the attachment. When we have strong attachment to someone, we have expectation, we have a desire for them to do what we think is best for them or what we want. So it's very difficult for a parent, because, and I think this must be the most difficult thing for a parent, is that process of letting go of your attachment to the children. But you have to do it in a skillful way. You can't just kind of let go of everything.
Mm.
What you're letting go of is not your love for them or your interest in their well-being, but your dependence upon that attachment that you have to them. So what it does for you, how it makes you feel. When I was young, I was awful. I was a terror. My poor mother, what she put up with. And it took me a very long time, until I was in my mid-20s, to see just what my mother had done for me, just what my parents had done for me, and how precious that was, and how fortunate I was. I don't think that you need to change the attachment in terms of love or looking after this guy, but maybe just look at where you're attaching, what you're attaching to. Is it your attachment to being a good parent that makes you upset about his behaviour? Is it your own desire to have him behave as you would have him behave? Something all parents, I think, in the end learn just doesn't work. So, yeah, I think that the best thing to do when I have problems with people in my life is just to see their good qualities and use that attachment to develop my own good qualities. So don't abandon these good qualities like love or kindness. Keep on developing them, but abandon those qualities which make the attachment perhaps more difficult, so like self-interest or expectation. Worry is hard. Parents, I don't know how they do it. That was quite a curly question.
Nice answer.
You think I managed okay?
I said that was beautiful.
My first time, remember?
Any more questions? Can we ask you about the meditation if we want?
Yeah,
just people might want that, especially if we've got new people.
Yeah, well, I think you never have enough questions for meditation. Yeah.
We have the pleasure and the pain. We have good reputation, bad reputation. Can you just quickly
remind me?
So the first one I mentioned was gain and loss. So getting things, losing things. So it can be physical things like money, material goods. It can be things like getting relationships, job promotions, anything like that. And losing things is anything. You could lose your health, your well-being, your looks, whatever, your phone, all these things. And then praise and blame. So it's different to reputation and a good reputation and bad reputation. So praise is those things that make us kind of feel good, and blame is the things that make us feel bad. And the reputation is how others perceive us and how it makes us perceive ourselves. So, I guess if when you look at your life, these things, they're there all the time. You can't help but notice them. But it's the way in which we view them, I think. Because in the time of the Buddha, they were there. They're still here. They're not going to go away at all. But if we want to have happiness in our life, we need to detach from them a little bit. And to identify them firstly, to know them when they're there and they're coming at us, and then to see them with wisdom and to react with them, to them skillfully. That's the Buddhist path. And that's why meditation is so powerful, because it does create that buffer zone. The more you practice, the more Teflon you become. If you've been practicing some meditation, you probably all experience this. You feel good. And because the mind is actually quite a simple thing, you have some happiness in there, some joy in there, some contentment. Nothing else can get in. The mind is full. So if someone calls us a bad name or we lose something, we don't lose that equanimity, that equilibrium of mind. So that's why these things are so it's important to develop that detachment, that buffer zone, to become a bit more Teflon, and you just go through the world much happier. Nothing sticks. Is that it? Thank you very much for having me, Armadale Group. I hope I did okay. And I hope I get to see you again sometime.